Ryan Callahan, Go Vols 24/7, joins us now. Ryan, good morning.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. Now, I'm not going to be over melodramatic, let's put it this way, when I say tomorrow for Tennessee, this is the game of the century. And here's why. Kentucky's been in this situation very, very many times. Tennessee, first time number one, longest winning streak, 19, never 11-0 in the conference, and the national TV spotlight. I dare say this is one of the biggest games. And sure, there's plenty to play for. This team can go to the Final Four even if it loses tomorrow. But as of just tomorrow, this is maybe the biggest Tennessee basketball game yet.
Woo.
Yeah, it's possible. You could certainly make that argument. Now, I personally would still – what it meant at the time, I think the Tennessee-Memphis game a decade ago still probably was a little bit bigger under, just in that situation. But this is right up there with it, I think, and just where they are, the winning streak they have going, the fact that they've got a number one seed in the NCAA tournament on the line. Yeah, there's a ton to play for, obviously, and you're going to be in the national spotlight. A lot of people are still kind of doubting Tennessee, wondering if they deserve to be number one over Duke and everyone else that's right behind them, nipping at their heels. So this is a big test for Tennessee, and if they kind of flop under the bright lights, you know, I think they could be dropped a little bit in the rankings, and that might cause them to at least be in question as a number one seed. So there is a lot to play for, and it won't be the end of their season if they lose, but they do need to I think show well here to defend that number one seed they have right now and give themselves a really good chance of winning an SEC title.
So, Ryan, what's the biggest concern for Tennessee going into Rupp Arena? I've always said when you go to a place like Rupp Arena, the biggest concern to me would be getting caught up in the banners and the crowd and the hoopla of playing in Rupp Arena. But I think this basketball team, for some reason, none of that phases them because I think they just go out and play 40 minutes of basketball and get out of town.
Yeah, and let's face it, this is a team that's had success against Kentucky in the recent past. This current senior class at Tennessee has a 4-3 record against Kentucky. That means a split this year if they don't play in the SEC tournament means this senior class at Tennessee would graduate with a winning record against Kentucky. How many senior classes at Tennessee could say that over the years? And they've won at Rupp Arena just last year, so they've got the track record and the experience to do it. So I definitely don't think they're going to be phased in the situation now that it is going to be probably an even more raucous environment up there than usual. We've seen ticket prices on the secondary market being really high, so I think there's a lot of anticipation from Kentucky fans for this game, and they're going to be fired up and anxious to see how they respond to this opportunity. So, yeah, you've got to not let the moment sort of swallow you. I think that's the concern if you're Tennessee, is letting the moment get to you a little bit and not you know, not playing out of character just because it's a big game and in the spotlight and, you know, college game day will be in town tomorrow morning and all that. You can't let that get to you. Beyond that, I think the biggest thing is on the court, you know, not letting Kentucky's length and athleticism disrupt them. I think that's a legitimate concern that not many teams Tennessee has faced will have the combination of the length and athleticism that Kentucky will have. Some of those teams, even in SEC play, we saw Alabama do it a little bit. Having the talent they do, and it's not even at Kentucky's level, but you disrupt Tennessee's passing lane, sort of get in the way of what they do offensively. It's hard to do, but some teams have disrupted them at times, so we'll see how they deal with that. But, yeah, I think it's mostly about just how they handle the moment tomorrow at Rupp Arena.
Who do you think is the most important person for the Tennessee Vols in that game tomorrow? Everybody's going to say Grant Williams. I keep going back to Jordan Bone. I think a good point guard is so valuable to a basketball team. I think to me, in that game tomorrow night, to kind of calm things down, he's the most important player, but I'm usually wrong.
No, I mean, that's a very good reasoning on that, and Jordan Bone has been a huge X factor for this team, so I don't think you're wrong at all in saying that. I do go toward the cop-out of Grant Williams, and that's the easy answer, but here's why for me, because not only is he just an important scorer, rebounder, everything else that he does for Tennessee, but he's so good at distributing the ball, and the offense often goes through him, or Admiral Schofield, but often him, and when he does get up against someone who sort of has the length and athleticism to bother him, it can sort of bog down the offense a little bit, or at least cause some turnovers that they can't afford. And foul trouble is always a concern with the post player. And I think especially a guy who plays as physically as him, You know, I've seen Tennessee fans on social media already kind of wringing their hands about the possibilities, but you've got to get the officiating to go your way, especially on the road like that. A guy like Grant Williams with a charge or block call that doesn't go his way could easily get flustered, could easily get a second foul early in this game. You got to keep him out of foul trouble, I think, for Tennessee to be at his best, and that's a big factor in this one. And also, Kyle Alexander.
Well, there you go. Recently. I'm going to jump in. Kyle Alexander's mine, okay? Before you segue to Kyle Alexander, that's my pick because he is the one who can match up and even cause matchup problems mm-hmm. because of his athleticism and certainly his length.
And that's not a bad call at all because, yeah, he is – When Tennessee has him on the court and he's playing well, he's a difference maker. And when he's in foul trouble or not in the game, as we saw last year in the NCAA tournament, and that was a different team, obviously, but not having him out there in the NCAA tournament, no doubt, played a huge role in Tennessee being bounced in the second round last year. So, yeah, I agree. I think that's a huge factor. He's had his games where he's gotten in foul trouble, and Tennessee hasn't had him, and just thankfully they've had the depth and experience and talent around them to sort of make up for it. And that's where a guy like Jordan Bone is huge. So it's really hard to pick just one guy in this case. But the reality is they need all those guys to be out there and at their best. And even one of those three we've mentioned being in foul trouble or not playing well could be the downfall for Tennessee in a game that could be this close.
Ryan Callahan with us. Ryan Callahan at Ryan Callahan 24/7. His Twitter handle. He is the recruiting coordinator and works for GoVols247.com. Let's transition a little to football. Barry Odom, Missouri coach. They go on probation. Seniors can leave. No, the postseason ban and everything. NCAA rules. They can leave if they want to. And there's going to be poaching. And Barry Odom calls out Jeremy Pruitt and UT as the number one culprit.
How about that? They had this meeting down at SEC headquarters this week, and that's sort of what led to the story. I think is the awkwardness and the tension that there could be with all these coaches in the room, and you wonder if anything was said directly from Barry Odom to Jeremy Pruitt or anyone else. I don't think Tennessee is the only SEC school that has reached out and gone after some of Missouri's players that are going into their final year of eligibility, which allows them to transfer freely because of the postseason ban Missouri has received. But Tennessee, it sounds like, has been the most aggressive in going after some of those guys. And it's easy to see that Tennessee needs help all over the place. So understandable that a team that beat Tennessee and has some talent on both sides of the ball might have some players that could help them. And so you can't fault Tennessee from that end, that just needing talent and needing to upgrade its roster. You also can't fault Barry Odom for being upset because, he feels right now that his program shouldn't even be dealing with the postseason ban, that, Missouri was just had the unfortunate reality is they just told the truth to the NCAA and they're sort of being punished for it in his eyes, whereas other schools have gotten away with sort of lying to hide the truth. And that's just the situation. So I think he's frustrated naturally, and especially that his players are maybe being coached, or there's the risk of that happening with other SEC teams. So that was very bold of him to come out and in that story say, hey, we beat Tennessee, 50-17 last year, and people are wanting to maybe transfer to a school like that. The grass isn't always greener on the other side. So we'll see what comes of it, but it was definitely a very upfront comment about the reality of the situation in his eyes and what Jeremy Pruitt has done. And some SEC coaches haven't handled it that way. Some told him, hey, we're not going to go after your players. Tennessee obviously among the exceptions, and he hasn't liked the way they've gone about it so far.
Well, I tell you what, Tennessee fans are looking for Tennessee to be back. There's step one when you start poaching other players from other teams. I think that's outstanding because you know what? Every other team's doing it.
Well, so I think that's what maybe has led to the reaction being so visceral from Barry Odom is that not every team is doing it. He's pointed out that Georgia and some other SEC teams sort of contacted him and said, hey, we're not going after your players. And as long as that's the case, you kind of tip your hat to those teams. Not every team's in the same situation, though. Some of those teams have the luxury of not needing to poach those players. Tennessee is certainly one of the teams that obviously could use the help if they could find someone that could contribute for them next year. So I can see both sides on that one. But, I think that's part of maybe the problem is that he's felt some SEC schools have sort of gone about it the right way or been really good about saying, hey, we're not going to go after your players. And he thought that was a cool gesture. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got a handful of SEC teams at least that have gone after them and one that's been particularly aggressive, at least based on what he's heard from some of his players.
Well, I think it sounds like high school Harry to me. Hey, you over here. Hey, don't go on probation. Keep your players there. You know, this is you're and John Adams had a great line. You're swimming with the sharks in the SEC, not goldfish. Okay,
right.
And
that's
so
the reality. Stay out of.
Yeah, this is hey. Tough. That's the way I feel about it. Tough. Because you don't think he would be over there trying to get Tennessee players to come help that sorry-ass program? No. I mean.
Well, and Ole Miss. Let's face it. Ole Miss has been in this situation a couple years ago. And what happened? Everybody in the country was trying to poach their players. They had a lot of talent on their roster. I think it would be a different story. One, if Missouri had a bunch of former five-star prospects. They have a couple of former highly ranked prospects that could be options. Guys like Terry Beckner. That they're on the roster and could be coached by another team, but not a lot. So if they have a lot of talent on the roster, it's maybe a different story for some of those teams that have reached out and tried to look like they're doing the honorable thing by not recruiting those guys. So I think, yeah, you're right. Most teams are going to do what they have to do, and I think it's just a situation that some teams are choosing not to go that route.
Well, and now Pruitt, looks like there still may be some changes with his coaching staff, but Terry Fair out. Just talk about the coaching changes and the defensive coordinator that they probably pulled without a title, probably from Alabama.
Yeah, I think how it works out, you know, is going to be really interesting because you know we're not sure that they're completely done, that there's not going to be any more movement. But with spring practice coming up now in just a few weeks, you certainly want to start to be settling in and getting your players acclimated to your new staff members. So it would seem there's a chance they're done. But, yeah, they've, I think, really made some nice upgrades to their staff this offseason. When you talk about the three hires they've made, Jim Chaney, T. Martin, and Derek Ansley, I think those three hires alone, you could argue, were better than any three coaches on most team staffs, even in the SEC. Those are three really good coaches right there. So to add guys like that to what was already a solid staff, upgrade your recruiting ability with hires like T. Martin and Derek Ansley, get a guy that you trust to work with your secondary that, you know, I think Terry Fair was clearly seen as an up-and-coming hire, a guy that was going to need to learn on the job under Jeremy Pruitt, and for whatever reason decided that wasn't a fit 1 year in. And, you know, that was a bold move on Jeremy Pruitt's part. You know, there's a risk of at least of some bad PR from getting rid of a former Tennessee player that, you know, was a GA under Butch Jones and came back to the program and is now back as an assistant coach. And to get rid of him 1 year in, a lot of people might say, well, why do you do that to a guy that's clearly still learning as a coach? You know, is there no way it can work out? But he did that, and he brings in a guy that he's very familiar with and that's very experienced and coming from the NFL and Derek Ansley. So I think they've made some really nice upgrades, and we'll see how it all shakes out. Jeremy Pruitt actually will address that today in a couple of hours here in a media availability to sort of discuss that. We'll maybe find out some details on what Derek Ansley's title might be. It sounds like defensive coordinator is a real possibility, though, which makes you think Kevin Scherer's role might change in some way. You've got co-defensive coordinator Chris Rump, defensive coordinator Kevin Scherer. You can't have three people with defensive coordinator titles, I don't think. So something's going to have to change there, and maybe we'll find out today what exactly that is. But, yeah, I think they're done, at least for now, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
Well, aren't there two? I think Kentucky is open defensive coordinator, and one other place has an opening, Georgia? Now, who has it?
Not Georgia, Kentucky, and I'm kidding.
But Scherer could come into play on either one of those, correct?
He could. I mean, Chris Rump could. Anyone could in theory. We don't know how those guys might feel about the situation. We don't know what Jeremy Pruitt's plan might be. You know, he's got sort of an open special teams coordinator role that he can offer to someone. You know, we've heard some whispers of Kevin Scherer maybe being part of the plan there. Does something like that work for him if that's what Tennessee offers him, or is he going to be sort of disappointed with that and want to go somewhere else that he can sort of retain that defensive coordinator title? So there's a lot of questions to be answered. Obviously, Kevin Scherer has a pretty long-running relationship with Jeremy Pruitt. Will that overcome any frustrations there might be over title and role? You know, there's some wrinkles to work out there, and that's why I'm not totally sure that they're completely done. And how they sort of handle this Ansley situation could play a big role in that. But, yeah, I think that's something that's still yet to be completely sorted out, and any potential openings that come available still could play a role in determining whether any of those guys decide to leave.
Well, do you see, Ryan, we see Coach Pruitt later on. Tell him that Greg and Joe said hi, will you?
I will. He'll probably stop his press conference to give you guys a nice long greeting. and I'll make sure.
If you did that, I'd give you $20 in the middle of the press conference. Hey, Coach, Greg and Joe say hi. He'd be like, get out of here. Hey, real quick.
They were at the Southern this morning. Get that in there, too.
Yeah, hey, real quick. The Tennessee Lady Vols softball team's playing currently. Is that game in Knoxville?
I don't believe so. I'm not familiar with their schedule for this weekend. They're usually on the road in tournaments.
Well, there's a left field question.
Well, they're on TV here. They're on TV on ESPN, ESPNU.
Well, look at your laptop.
Well, I like Ryan Callahan. He's my laptop. I'm just curious because at 9 o'clock in the morning is kind of an odd time for a softball game.
Well, you have these classics. They are playing in the St. Petersburg Clearwater Elite Invitational right now against Notre Dame. It took me three seconds to find it.
Yeah, so next week Tennessee plays its home opener in the Tennessee Classic. This is that time of year they often have a lot of tournaments, sort of warm weather places ideally to avoid weather being a huge factor and canceling some games. So, yeah, usually they start on the road for the first couple weeks. Now, Tennessee baseball is at home today starting its season against Appalachian State, but softball not playing its home opener until a week from today.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, last week they were in the Kickin' Chicken Classic.
That's right.
I'm not making that up. Yeah, Ryan, we'll talk to you next Friday morning. Thank you, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Ryan Callahan on Twitter at Ryan Callahan 24/7.